Welcome to the R7 Christian Marketing Podcast, sponsored by Emma's Good.
R7 is an innovative, God-inspiring process that explores personal and professional purpose. R7 analyzes seven strategies to transform your vision and find direction in your organizational marketing. R7 establishes clarity and guidance for the gift we call life. This is my
destiny. Joe Schmidt's back in the house. Let's go.
I like that part.
This is my destiny. Is that I'm just you? Glad that you have your clothes on. You're not like
Did you sing that jingle? That's you, isn't it?
I know it's not me. I paid somebody to do it, actually.
It would have been so much better if it was you.
Yeah. It's not.
So what are we talking about today, Dr. Dave?
Dr. Dave wants to hear from the marketing guy, Joe Schmidt himself, builder of how many businesses, how many millions of dollars, why Christians and marketing suck.
You know, it's funny. You and I haven't talked about this. So my dad died this week.
I did see that. I'm so sorry to hear that, man.
My dad died a week ago. And he was okay. So here's the first thing I'd throw out is I really like that saying, which it's not biblical at all, but I like the saying about, you know, pray like it depends on God, work like it depends on you. I love that. Like, I think that's a really good, simple little catchphrase. And that was my dad. My dad, when I think of my dad, I was telling somebody, I'm not giving his eulogy, but if I was going to give it, the word toil would be the term that I would use for my dad. I mean, he toiled. My dad worked his rear end off. Now, the dilemma was he went to church every Sunday and he viewed the results of his toiling as a response of God. And so because he tied it so closely to his belief in God, when he didn't succeed, which my dad struggled a lot in his entrepreneurial career, he looked at it as a reflection of what God thought of him. And so he'd go to mass more. He'd go to church more. He would keep trying to earn that affirmation, and that would then turn into positive outcome. And honestly, positive outcome in dumb business decisions. Like he would do things. My dad and I didn't work together. I realized very early on that we weren't compatible for working together. But, you know, I think he would make poor business decisions or, you know, bad judgment, and the outcome would be negative. And he would then spiritualize that beyond just that was a dumb thing to do. Like, you shouldn't have done that, dude. And I mean, and I would tell him, I'd be like, that was not smart. So that I don't think it was God. I think it was like, that was a really dumb thing to do. And so it didn't work. So I think sometimes you can over spiritualize, but the key to that is the effort that you have to put in. It doesn't matter if you're a believer or not a believer. Like, you know, you got to work. You can pray, and that's all part of it, and spirituality is all part of it, but it's the grind, man. Like, if you want success in anything, you know this as an athlete. Like, it's about the grind. It's about putting in the time, putting in the hours.
So is this where Christian marketing falls off? Are we saying that some potential Christian entrepreneurs perhaps maybe lean on God a little bit more and don't work? Over-spiritualize it and just don't work?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this. You know, the service industry is just not great.
It's awful. Zero sum game every single day, right? Like, start over, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, home services is so suspect. You never know who's going to show up, if they're going to be any good. And they're the ones that you always see fish on the back of their trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You always see fish symbols. You always see, you know, me and my company give the glory to God. You know, you see the Bible license plates. And, you know, I think a lot of those folks are, you know, living a lifestyle of being in business. Now, I'm not necessarily saying, so it's this again isn't necessarily going to turn into suck, but they're obviously missing the point. I mean, a big part of the point of being a follower of Christ, which is, you know, excellence in all things, because whatever you're doing is giving glory to God, which was a core part of Christ's message. And so I mean, like, if I'm doing a crappy job showing up to fix somebody's HVAC, like, that's like not, that's definitely not in the heart of what it is that we're supposed to be following and working at. Now, does that then mean that you suck? I mean, for a lot of them, yeah. I mean, they just do. I wish they didn't. But they definitely do. I think I do think part of it also comes into play where, back to the first point, where the work ethic just isn't necessarily there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I feel like God called me to do this, and he's gonna make it successful.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I mean, that's just not how it works. Like, I wish that the moment you accepted Jesus, all of a sudden everything was good and easy. I had to rush home because I had to take my daughter to soccer tonight. She's concussed. She's got a concussion right now. So I drove her to soccer and was driving home for this podcast. And I drove by the same sign that's out in front of a storage unit that I drive by every time I go to soccer. And it says, no, K-N-O-W, no. No Jesus, no peace. Mm. And it's like they've taken their billboard that they would say like free rentals or whatever,
right,
and they proselytize on it, which is fine, good for them, whatever they want to do. But I was driving by that thing thinking about, like, really? Like, again, that's our pitch, because we're just going to let people down. Like, Now I would say that a very advanced spiritual faith in Christ can give you peace. It can give you not necessarily the American definition of peace, you know, laying on a beach, relaxing with the wind, you know, blowing through somebody else's hair, not yours.
Not ours.
Not ours. we should call this podcast Two Bald Guys. That's got to exist already.
Right.
But, you know, I think that a lot of entrepreneurs and business people think that bringing Christ into your business is going to bring peace into your business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, man, like, it's hard.
It's a grind.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes the only value is that you get to choose your commute. Like, you get to pick where you work or who you work with.
So we got a couple stories that you and I can share here that I love to pull out of you. One is, and you didn't know this was coming, but one is, I think you and I share the frustration of people working in the church.
Mm.
And like, I just remember multiple times you going, I don't know what those people are doing over there. Like, I just don't even know. And like, you know, if you're around Christianity long enough, you go through the cycle of, I'm so fired up for the church, I'm going to do everything I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And then you get into like, I'm so burnt out of the church. Yeah. Like, I'm totally done with this thing. Like, this is, And then you go back and then you're like, I just want to come here and worship. Don't get me involved. And some of us have funded churches and like, you just go through this phase of these people are messed up or I'm going to be one of those people, you know? Yeah. And I think you and I have been through the cycle of this for well over two decades, probably. But, you know, there is definitely a mentality there of like, yep, God's going to take care of it. You know, we don't need to do anything rigorous here. And I'm not saying all churches. I'm just saying like we've been through that.
Well, I mean, it's culture over competence, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, everybody has bagels in the morning together and, you know, and then they have a little prayer time and then everybody has lunch together and then there's a little prayer time. And I mean, I'm all for, I mean, we should be praying all the time, right? Everything in our life is a prayer. But yeah, man, it's like you get done with a good church meeting that's an hour and you're like, that was definitely a 5 minute text conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like we could have knocked that out in 5 minutes of texting, but we wanted to make sure that nobody's feelings got hurt. So we wanted to give everybody a say, wanted to give everybody information so that everybody could know what was going on. Cause we're being nice, I guess. I don't know why they do it. It's just inefficient.
Yeah. I just feel like sometimes there's just the performance. It's just not about like, hey, we need to get this thing done. Like I've worked with so many mega churches in their video production side of things. And like when I was running my video production side of my business, you know, we had a 17,000 square foot facility, 495 seat
right.
HD studio. My nut each month was like $50,000 just for the building. And then I got to go, you know, get clients and do projects. And I'm like, guys, we got to like turn through these projects. Like we can't like be messing. Like we got to get this thing done. Like, here are the projects this week. We got to get these out and build like a restaurant, you know, like you got to turn a table because
people are going to show up for dinner tonight. Yeah. Like, they're coming whether we're ready or not.
Yeah. And it isn't a table for one for the whole restaurant. And we can't just, you know, like we got to move. And so like, there's this sort of like business side of things. Like you gotta do a lot of projects, you know, you gotta get them out, you gotta bill them, you gotta do collections. And I feel like some of the churches I've been involved with, like, dude, like there's so much cash there and we could spend like literally 200 hours on a video project when it would have taken me 10 and gotten out the door. And I'm like, guys, come on, we got to move this thing down the road. Like dude, we spent enough time on this thing. And so I feel like there's a lot of waste there.
Yeah. I mean, I also think, you know, so many churches, especially the mega churches, it's about Sunday performance, right? So it's about the show and prepping for the show. And the reality is, I mean, now I know that as a pastor, I mean, I've watched those guys. I mean, those guys, I give them a lot of credit because I mean, I have personally seen the strain of prepping for Sunday. And, you know, one of my buddies used to talk about it felt like a steam engine coming at him all week long. And it's just getting closer and closer and closer. And he's laying on the tracks. Like, and I mean, it will wear you out.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to inspire everybody every single week. And that's why so many of those guys end up, you know, not enjoying it and
burning out.
And yeah, but I think so much of the rest of it is, you know, not KPI driven. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, what else has to get done besides the performance on Sunday? You know, everything else during the week, you know, they can have other ministry areas and things like that, but you know, how are they being judged? How are they being, has performance being calculated? You know, what's the purpose? How does that feed the core of what the purpose of that particular organization is? And I think a lot of those things get lost, but you know, a lot of that is because they're being run by pastors. Like somewhere along the line, we decided it's just, we were talking about nonprofits in the last episode, you know, we've decided that because you've been gifted to spread the message and as an orator, that you're also supposed to be the manager. You're supposed to be a really good CEO. It would be like saying every actor should be brilliant at running companies. So many of the opposite traits of being good at running a company are not part of being a good orator. I mean, yes, you can speak, but I mean, and so, you know, we end up having CEOs of these churches that are guys that just want to preach. And then they got to sit in meetings all week and, you know, run a $10 million organization or more.
Recently, I've been watching Dave Portnoy. Dave Portnoy is the CEO of Barstool Sports.
Right.
And he does the pizza reviews, and now he's doing college reviews. He actually did Utah the other day because my son goes there, and so I thought it was interesting. And then you know he does the Big Noon show, which is you know like in competition with the game day on ESPN, and like he's just out there right now, and he's filling up my For You page. And so I was like, man, like all these reviews, you know, it's definitely clickbait, whatever. But I was like, what if there was somebody who actually went from church to church and city to city and did a review of the service?
Oh.
Oh, my gosh, Joe. Like the accountability.
That would be fun.
The account of like when Dave does a pizza review, like he's done like, I don't know, like something crazy, like 8,000 pizza reviews. And like there are owners on the street, like, don't come here. Like, right. Don't come and give me because our pizza's not very good. And if you give a review, I'm really right. going to lose, you know, like, and then there's people like, dude, you got to try my pizza. And like, he flies around, he just tries, he eats pizza and gives it a review, you know, and it's like, it, and then people flock to that pizza mm-hmm. place. And I'm like, wow, the accountability that could happen when somebody actually gave you an honest review of your service and your interaction with the community, like, and it was like a legit review. There'd be some serious conversations and, you know, accountability that would be there.
Well, yeah. I mean
that, think about it. There's nobody reviewing it. There's nobody. And I can hear, weird. I can hear the religious people going, you can't review a service. This is a relationship between you and, you know, right, God. They're like, oh, okay. You know, all that nonsense.
Well, and the good ones, you know, the good ones do, you know, postmortems on services and, you know, they look at some of those things. And for anybody listening out there, I mean, the big mega churches are actually like they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases. But again, you go back to and the really good ones. So if for folks who don't know this, there's usually an executive pastor. So there's a term called executive pastor. And the executive pastor kind of acts as the president and chief operating officer of a church, of a larger church. And that solved some of it, mm-hmm. you know, because and a lot of times they'll be from the secular world. They won't necessarily be pastors. They would have been previous business owners. So they'll have some idea. But you still come back to, I mean, I think about the businesses that I've run. And if on top of running the business, every Sunday, I have to give a TED talk that if it's not good, I might not get paid.
Hello.
Like I would be so distracted.
Right.
Like, I mean, the idea of me sitting there and spending time doing personal development for my marketing team or my worship team, like, I couldn't do it. Like I wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I would have no interest in doing it. So like I could see where, it, you know, if you're not organized right. And then, you know, I think one of the other things that from a church perspective, it goes back to our discussion last week, which is, you know, what is the message and what message are you putting out there? And, you know, and we've got seeker churches and we've got discipleship churches and, you know, and supposedly they, you know, they do things different and whatever, different approaches. But, you know, and even the big mega churches, there's something really interesting too, because we've been going to a church for a little while and they've done some things on stage that just like gave me the freaking willies. Okay. Like if my daughter wasn't going to teen youth, yeah, like I would have been done. Cause like, and I'm not going to go into it, cause then we'd have a debate on whether or not it was willy driven or not. But I was sitting there thinking, like, if I'm feeling this, then let's say 10% of the folks sitting in this church are feeling it. Like, I'm not that particularly special in the way that I think. 10%, 5%. But like, nobody got up and walked out. You know, nobody left. Like, if a movie would treat me like, would make me feel that way, I'd get up and leave the movie. Right. Like, it's not right. A big deal. I'd skip the rest of this movie. But like, nobody's going to stand up and walk out because
why?
I don't know.
Exactly. Because we're just so tolerant and it's okay and it's God's will and we're all not comfortable with this.
Right. And we might actually believe that the person up there who's saying that has some infinite wisdom that has been given to them more than the wisdom that I'm feeling in my heart that's saying that is not right.
But Joe, if it reaches one person, then God's will has been done.
Right. That's right.
So who are you to judge for that one person? It's not for you, Job. It's for somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, they end up, it's hard to do church well. And you certainly can't do it you can't feed everyone appropriately and properly. And,
yeah.
And you know, and I mean, I realized that a long time ago. I mean, I kind of gave up on finding a church where every Sunday I was going to sit there and agree.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily I've had several pastors in my life that were cool with that. They were friends and they knew, you know, they'd look at me after a service and be like, can we not talk about whatever you disagreed with now, but we can't over a beer later this week. Because they know that I was sitting there going, seriously? Like,
yeah. I've kind of relegated to, I'm going to major in the majors and not major in the minors.
Yeah. It's just, and again, they're so fallible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're all fallible. They're fallible. Churches are fallible. A lot of moving parts. It's a hard business to run. But it also tends to lead itself to a lot of mediocrity, you know, especially if you excel at one particular thing, then it's really easy to get focused on that one particular thing, like message, like Sunday worship. Like if your worship is out of control, then, you know, the idea of, okay, we're going to make our children's ministry just that badass. Like that's hard. Like it's hard to keep them all. Now, like you're saying, once you start clipping along, you know, money starts to become much less of a factor and you can overhire and fluff. I mean, more than I've ever been able to do in any business I've run. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you got churches out there with a $10 million budget where it's like, you know, they've got a 10 person production team.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be nice,
right?
Like that would be freaking awesome. But you know, the building's paid for, so there's no rent. Like the cost of the product is literally salaries. And so, you know, we're talking about churches that are developed. I'm not talking about startup churches and things like that, because those guys are incredibly entrepreneurial and they do amazing things, and not knocking them, but I do think it's easy to get mediocre pretty quick.
And I think we can say that about just anybody in business, not necessarily Christian businesses, right? Yeah. And you know, it's just easy to be average. And I often say, you know, the two tenets of a human being are to the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. Like when you're really building, you're grinding, and that's really hard. And nobody really wants to do that hard stuff for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And I just remember back in the story you had told me about your 10 and 2. And like, you know, and even before you get into that, if you could just share the context, if you're allowed to, the story behind how you got there, because I think a lot of where we fail is kind of the decisions before the big, oh crap, what are we in? Right. And kind of, so walk us through that. Cause I think that's a really awesome story.
So the, I don't even, I'm not going to do years cause that'll also just date me. The, but my business partner and I had a business and it was going okay. And we got nominated for the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Awards for the Southeastern part of the United States. And, you know, we thought that was kind of cool. And, you know, the business still wasn't making a lot of money, but it was growing pretty quick. And so we started to get a little over our skis. You know, we started to think that we had kind of shown up and that we'd arrived and, you know, that this was the good life and we were going to get rich and make a lot of money and sell this thing or whatever we thought we were going to do. I don't even know what we thought we were going to do because we were barely paying ourselves.
Yeah. So just walk us through what that meant. Were you buying stuff you shouldn't be buying? Were you expanding when you shouldn't expanded?
Like at that time we were literally, no, it was just more like a feeling. Cause we were still broke. I mean, we were broke. I mean, it's funny cause entrepreneurs, like folks don't get the fact that when you're in building phase, it's great that you've gone from zero to $3 million in revenue in a year, but like, that doesn't mean that you have $3 million.
Right.
Like it probably means that you're in debt, like a ton of freaking money. Like it doesn't mean that you're paying yourself, you know, you got bank. You know, you're probably still grinding and barely paying yourself. So that's more of where we were. And so we went down to this event in Charlotte, North Carolina. We took our wives. It was a black tie event. Got all dressed up. Went down. Lost. Didn't win. Freaking other guys won. Not going to name their names. Still a little bitter. they were incredibly more successful than we were. So. With that business. So they totally deserved it. But while we were at this event, a guy came up to my business partner and said, "Hey, I'm so-and-so and I work with a private equity group and I'd really like to meet with you guys." Mm. And we were like, dude, it's going to rain money. And so he's like, yeah, we'll see if we can find time, but how's tomorrow morning? And so this guy was like, sure. I mean, are you staying in Charlotte tonight? And we were staying in Charlotte. So, you know, of course we told our wives, yeah, you know, the private equity guys, they want to meet with us in the morning. So, you know, we're going to have to pause heading home because we got to go meet with the money guys. So anyway, so we went to this guy's office. It was a high rise in one of the, you know, Charlotte's a big banking center. So they've got all these tall buildings. So it was Bank One or something. Went way up to the 149th floor. I don't know what it was, but we went high and got out into this bougie, you know, wood cool looking office. And we went into this guy's office and we sat down and the entire conversation was no more than 3 minutes, like the whole meeting. So he said, so where are you guys? Top line, bottom line revenue. And we were like, well, we're at like $3 million and, you know, we're not turning a profit. We're barely breaking even every month. But we didn't owe a lot of money. We didn't have a lot of debt. And he went, oh, guys, sorry. I, I didn't realize that. And we were like, wait, you're saying sorry. Like,
we haven't arrived.
This isn't going. So you're not going to offer us $100 million for our company? And he said, yeah, there's no reason for us to really even, I don't want to waste your time. So it was nice to meet you guys though. And we're both sitting there going, like, and this was 5 years in. Like, we had been working our asses off for 5 years. And my business partner said, what numbers should we have said? Which was so smart. He was so much smarter. Mm-hmm. And he said, what numbers would we have said that you would have not thrown us out? And he was really nice. He wasn't trying to be a jerk. And he said, well, I mean, like, you guys, in order for this business to be valuable in our particular space that we were in, he's like, you got to be at top line of 10, bottom line of 2. You got to be doing $10 million with a 20% EBITDA. And so my partner repeated it to him. He said, so you're saying 10 and 2. And he said, yeah, 10 and 2. And you've got something that's valuable that we'd love to talk about. So we left that meeting. Our wives had actually driven home together. So it was me and him. So on the drive back, we made two decisions that day. So this particular time frame was 2008, 2007, 2008. I said I wasn't going to date myself, but it's important because for those of you who were born then, which so many people weren't, we've talked about how old we are. It was a horrible economic crisis in 2008. It was a disaster out there.
Yeah.
And so we made two decisions. One decision was we were going to turn off the noise. Mm-hmm. So we made the decision that we were going to be a valuable company in 24 months. We were going to get to 10 and 2 in 24 months.
And you wrote this everywhere, right? You put this.
Yes. Yeah. When we got back to the office, we wrote 10/2 on every whiteboard in the building and on every window in the building in the corners. And nobody else knew what it was except for me and my partner. But we wrote 10 and 2 everywhere. So one was that we were going to get to 10 and 2 in 24 months. And two was that we were going to turn off the noise. Now, turning off the noise was hard back then. I mean, or now. It was literally, we made the decision, no news, no looking at our phones for feeds, no meeting with our financial advisors, no looking at our finances, at personal finances. Like, we literally made the decision to go into a cocoon and eliminate everything out there that was saying that tripling a business or whatever it is, 300% growth in a 24-month period was totally not feasible in 2008. That's what the world was saying. So we got back to the office, we wrote 10 and 2 everywhere. We checked out from all the noise.
Didn't you skip Christmas too? Didn't you tell me you slept in your office?
Well, yeah. I mean, we did that a lot because it was e-commerce. So, you know, we were doing e-commerce. So, you know, our holiday shipments, you know, we were shipping out Christmas gifts.
Okay.
So, you know, every year, Thanksgiving was kind of a going away party for me with my family. Like, we'd have Thanksgiving dinner and the kids would say, bye, Dad. We'll see you on December 24th. Because come December 24th, we couldn't ship any more product. So we were kind of done by the 23rd or 24th.
So Black Friday, Cyber Monday was probably huge.
It was insane. And so, yeah. I mean, we would just work. I mean, we were just working. We would just be in the building at the office, producing product, selling product day and night for those 6 weeks. But and I mean, we do, you know, 40% of all of our revenue in 6 weeks for a year,
right?
Which is not uncommon for e-commerce companies. I mean, that's how it happens. And our product was a giftable product. So we locked in. We locked in on 10 and 2. We locked in on getting rid of the noise, and we sold the company 24 months later.
You hit your numbers.
Yep, we actually surpassed 10 and 2. The two was harder than the 10, which anybody will tell you, you know, get managing an EBITDA of whatever it is, especially if you're producing a product, because there's so much cost going into the actual physical product that, you know, your gross margins, it, you know, software, you can do things, you know, you can have these crazy EBITDA numbers with crazy profit when you get down the road of the development, things like that. But in a physical product business, the two was really hard. But and as soon as we hit 10 and two, we started to kind of float things out in the market. We never called the guy back down in Charlotte, but I would today if I remembered who it was, and I'd thank him. Because honestly, if it wouldn't have been for that guy's brutal honesty,
yeah,
which is also something that I think that Christians have a hard time with, sometimes just as believers, because, you know, they're trying to balance, you know, being kind and trying to talk to people about Jesus or whatever, with being able to speak brutal honesty to people. But if he wouldn't have done that, then I don't think, you know, we could have toiled around for, you know, another 5 years just trying to figure out what should our goal be.
You know, I do think it's a hard, like, theological thing to think about, because, you know, here we have the Old Testament, which is all about performance. And then Jesus comes and it's not about performance at all. It's about the love of Christ. And to be a good Christian, you know, you don't really want to get into performance of how many Hail Marys you've done, you know, because God doesn't look at that. He looks at your heart and how much you love. But yet we're in this business of, like, we got to perform. We need a performance metric. Like, it's, and even in, like, you know, like sports, you know, for athletes, like, they got to perform. And so, but then, you know, do you need to perform? Because, you know, it's about the love of Jesus. Like, it's a hard tightrope, you know, to walk, you know, and I can see where, you know, I've been in the Christian marketing space bubble for 25 years. And I've talked to a lot of men and women of God that have a vision from the Lord, and like, hey, is this a good idea? I've often thought, man, I could totally do like a Christian Shark Tank just from the leads we get.
Right.
You know? But you know, I've been through that with a lot of different startups and, you know, mid to high level organizations. And it is a balancing act. It is a tightrope of, this ad has to perform. This messaging has to work. It's not working. I created it. My pride's on the line. My job's on the line. I have to perform. Wait, I don't have to perform. You know, and so I get that it's hard, and it's something you have to navigate as a Christian, which in the secular world, I mean, I don't have much experience there because I just, like I said, have been in this bubble. But I can see where it's easier. It's way easier. In the Christian world, or in the secular world, so to speak, you know, like, it's just, we got to perform. If you don't, you're out. See you later. You know, it's clean. I want to make as much money as I possibly can. You and I have talked about this, the idea of grace versus greed, you know, and, you know, what's more powerful, you know, and sometimes it's just easier to work with people that don't have a Christian background because it's just so clean in their intent.
Well, and don't you think that, I mean, really, it's really hard to find how to weave your faith into your work. I mean, that's a hard thing to do. Like, I think sometimes we can say it's easy, you know, that it's your, you know, your daily life or whatever, and how you're living, or, but like, you know, when you're a project manager, you know, working for a software company, like, you know, how does my daily activity, if I don't take that and put that into my bucket of work, and it's a different bucket than my bucket of faith, then you're right. It becomes much easier if I don't mix the two buckets. Because if I start mixing the two buckets, then it's like, you know, it's the question of, does performance matter? Which I would argue that performance always matters, because we have been given gifts, every single one of us, and our job here on earth is to maximize the gifts that God's given us. Like, I think that was a big part of Christ's message. He was saying, and whether your gift, you know, whether it was you had money or you had the ability to speak well or you had the ability to clean well, you do it all as best as you possibly can. And so, I mean, I kind of get that, but that it's kind of, that's more like a cheap way to throw faith into work. So like, how do you see people who mix the two really well without being like, I mean, like right now we run a customer service company that's in Central America. The fact that our business just exists is helpful to people. Mm. Because it's giving people work in a third world country. You know, like we have so many opportunities to serve and teach and lead and do things just because of the nature of our business. But like most people don't have that. So like how do you see people who really do it well?
You know? Yeah. So I have struggled with this question. And I have an answer. I think it's a good answer. It's an answer. It provides clarity and direction. I don't know.
It's from Dr. Dave. It's a good answer.
Come on.
I'm just saying.
I don't know that's a silver bullet at this point, but I was studying identity, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, what is a healthy identity? And I actually found a couple of sports psych journals that pointed to attributes of a healthy identity. And so it's what you said earlier, Joe, is, you know, excellence in all I do. So excellence is one of those healthy identity attributes. Dedication, mm-hmm. persistence are other ones. I think there's 8. And so if we just take the word excellence and we say, all right, man, Jesus was awesome. He was excellent. Look what he created. Like, it's pretty awesome out there, what he's created. How do I become excellent at what I do? And does that, and I kind of look at like, this is like the PhD version of being a Christian, mm-hmm. you know, like the high school version of being a Christian is I read my Bible.
Right.
Right. Like I'm a good Christian. I go to church. I read my Bible. I give, you know, I serve. Like that's kind of the entry level. To me, it's more about like, I want to glorify him with my talents and my abilities. So you have to figure out what those are and now go be excellent at it. Mm. Like what is really truly excellence? And I think we mix excellence with perfection. Yeah. So I have to be perfect. So excellence is, I've actually have a definition for excellence. It's doing the best that you can with the current resources available to you in this moment. And so like if my arm hurts and I'm a baseball player, I do the best that I can with the current resources available to me in this moment, even though my arm hurts. It's not perfect, but it's excellent. So what can I put around me? The resources, the time to be excellent. It's not perfect. It's excellent. And so that becomes our North Star, the excellence. Mm-hmm. So it's not my faith in the workplace. I have to make sure everybody sees me reading my Bible. No, it's about being excellent, man. Like, can you come to work drunk and do excellent work? No. So I'm not going to drink. Can I do drugs? No. Can, you know, like, so there's certain things that like the Bible, you mentioned it earlier too, the Bible gives us guardrails. And so I think about, okay, what's a guardrail? Well, a guardrail, you know, typically is around, you know, a road that has a ditch or a cliff. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if the guardrail is not there, I'm going to die. Now, the guardrail is there and I hit it and I bounce off, that sucks too, but at least I'm still on the road to what I'm supposed to be doing. Like that's going to hurt. So sometimes we have to put down a guardrail and say, this is a boundary. I'm not going to, mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, and so I have to tell somebody, I'm not going to go do that. That hurts. That's a guardrail, but it's not a cliff, you know? And so I think about that. So these attributes of a healthy identity, I'll include mm-hmm. them in the show notes is an answer. Like I said, I don't know if it's super thorough, but it does provide clarity and direction. And well, it does get you out of that like Christian, like, oh, every time I see him, he's going to talk to me about Jesus.
Right.
You know, we've been down that road. Like that doesn't work.
Yeah, or literally trying to figure out how does my work relate to Christianity? Like, you know, because I feel like a lot of people are, you know, they're like digging to try to figure out, you know, I feel like I'm proselytizing to everybody in the office. You know, that's the reason I'm there. Mm-hmm. You know, or I'm there, you know, because there's one particular person that I feel like, and I'm not saying maybe that is a reason that,
right.
But like, I mean, the reality is work is work. Like we have to, like we have to work. We live in a society where that's how you survive. And I was actually, so I'm not a big social media person, but I saw this guy talking, and I wish I could give him credit because it was really smart, but he was speaking to a bunch of college students, and he said, look, one of the worst things that anybody can get up on a stage in front of college students and say to them is the following: follow your passion.
Okay.
He's like, that is the dumbest thing in the world. If anybody says that to you, get up and leave, because it's just going to screw you up for your life. And he had me, right? So all of a sudden I'm like, okay, yeah, I got this. Because, you know, in any business that I've been slightly successful at, it has not been bass fishing or bow hunting, which, you know, or loving my wife, which, like, those are my passions, or being a girl dad. Like, I have yet to figure out how to not spend tremendous amounts of money on my passions, not make it.
Right.
They're like bottomless buckets that I feel like I pour cash into. But the, I mean, except for my wife.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a good investment.
But the, anyway, so he had me, and then the next thing he said was really brilliant. He said, instead, what I'm going to tell you all to do is go figure out what you're good at. Figure out what your gifts are.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and then take your gifts and figure out how you can make money using your gifts. He said, then what happens if you do that, a crazy thing will start to take place. You'll find some success, and endorphins and dopamine will start firing in your mind. And then you'll realize that people are coming to you because they're interested in your knowledge, because you're good at this. And then you're teaching other people, and you're pouring into their lives, and you're getting more responsibility. And there's, you know, these other things that come with that. And before you know it, you're starting to become passionate about the area in which you're working that you're good at. And he ended the whole thing talking about tax lawyers. He was like, nobody woke up, you know, nobody's walking around at 12 going, my dream is to do really intricate tax work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is it. And he's like, but tax guys are flying around on private jets, and they're pretty stinking passionate about taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the high end guys that are working with billionaires, I really liked where he was going with that, because I also, and your prompt today, Christians in marketing, entrepreneur Christians, you know, I do think that a lot of us, because we're spiritualizing our work, think that our work has to descriptively, at the beginning, when we're in our 20s, equal impact on the world. Like, and we're praying about, you know, what is God calling me to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that we miss is, you know, what gifts is God calling me to use? Not what is he calling me to do? Because again, you and I have talked about this, you know, the outcome is the outcome of our efforts, you know, it's important, because we live in the world that we live in. But like to God, he's not looking for our outcomes. He's right. looking for our effort and our stewardship of the gifts that he's given us.
So back to the story of the 10 and 2.
Yeah.
And pulling this story together, what was that skill you think that was in the 10 and 2? Because you obviously you were very good at it because you got successful at it. What was the skill there?
Laser focus. Which as somebody with, you know, ADD, ADHD, whatever term you want to put on it, for us, what I realized was that if I have an incredibly clear goal,
mm-hmm.
that I can achieve it if I focus enough on it and eliminate. So the way that we use 10 and 2, because 10 and 2 wasn't just like a mantra up on the board. It's literally how we made every decision throughout the day. So if somebody would walk in my office and bring up a topic, I would be looking past them at the 10 and the 2. And I would be trying to figure out, is this going to increase our revenue, the 10? Or is this going to make us more money? Is this going to make us more profitable too?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't match either one of those, we weren't going to have the conversation.
Yeah.
Like this topic is tabled. Maybe we can talk about it someday, but no, we're not going to work on this.
I also think about like that laser focus, but also building. Like you're a builder.
Yeah.
You build businesses.
It's what I'm good at. I am not good at managing a business.
Yeah. So building and being laser focused and dedicated and commitment to it for a short period of time, like you crush that, man. Like you're very rare air in terms of people that can do that.
Well, and it's a gift. I mean, I would not take credit for what you just said. Like I would take credit that I've worked at it. And then there's pride in the fact that I've cultivated that skill, but I mean that's very much me figuring out about myself what are the innate things that I'm good at. And for me it was being able to see stuff that you can't quite see. I'm pretty good at seeing around corners, you know, and kind of figuring out what something could be. You know, those are the things that were my gifting. And then I figured out, okay, I can apply those to starting businesses. And I would say another part of my gifting is that I'm not afraid to fail. I have no issue with mud on my face. Like I can see just fine if I'm clean or I'm muddy. Like it's never been a problem for me. And as an entrepreneur, you have to be able to, if you can accept failure and work with it and grow from it and, you know, get up, then you're in a great place to eventually find success. I mean, we started 7 businesses in 7 years at one point, my business partner and I, seven businesses in 7 months.
Oh my goodness.
That's a whole nother podcast, but we did it because we were under the gun, and I'll tell the story sometime, but And 6 of them failed. Like 6 of those businesses did awful. And some of them
reached out. But one did really well.
And one took off. One did well, and that business sold eventually and was kind of our launching pad for being able to do other things. But I mean, I'm saying like some of the stuff we were doing is just downright embarrassing. Like it was just, but we built quickly, we failed quickly, we failed forward. And those were things that I was pretty good at. So I figured, and none of them were, you know, the ability to, you know, send kids to school who can't afford to go to school or, you know, feed starving children in third world countries because of some business that I started. You know, they were all little niche companies that did certain things, but we, you know, we do things with excellence using our skills. And I think those are all incredibly in the heart of what Jesus wants us to do.
So I want to go back just for a second, just to clarify, you said, I don't have any problem with mud on my faith. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Mud on my face.
Face. I thought you said faith.
Okay. Not mud on my faith.
Although that's, better.
I wouldn't give you mud on my faith. You would turn that into a whole thing.
That's awesome. Mud on my faith.
Okay, we should do that one.
Because that's beautiful. Like to me, that's like that's one thing I love about you. Like you had taught me early on, say, listen, if you got this if you have a company you're marketing for, put up 6 ads. Like just let them go and mm-hmm. see which one and let the market tell you. I'm like, that's yes. Like, whereas I have to create this one ad and it's got to work because I designed it and I came with the messaging and it's their money and I got to make sure. No, man, A/B test. Let the world tell you what's going to work and be okay with that. And so to me, like letting go of that prideful, like you just don't have that. Like what needs the work is the business, not my pride. So I actually like mud on my faith.
Well, and you know that. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. So I mean, part of it is also just downright necessity, man. I mean, like if you were an overnight success in being an entrepreneur, then good for you. That's awesome. That's great. Good for those folks who have become filthy rich, you know, in 24 months because they built some app at the right time in human history or whatever. But for the rest of us, man, it's a matter of, you know, you're responsible for people's lives and, you know, you got to make payroll. And if you don't make payroll, then that's bad. Like your employees won't eat. And so, you know, some of it is just downright necessity. But again, that goes back to using our skills and our talents and trying to do, I love your definition of excellence and trying to do the best you can with what you have at the moment that you have it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and I it's interesting because we could actually do a whole piece on that around, you know, borrowing money, and taking on capital investments. You know, because that, and I'm not saying it's not a good thing to do, and people do it all the time. It's not been something that I've done in my career. So I've not raised money for businesses. I've bootstrapped the businesses that I have, and part of the reason that I've done that, not knowing your definition of excellence, was it kind of skews the resources that I have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like if you're really using the equation of do the best you can with the resources you have at the moment in time that you're in, but the resources that you have are actually unlimited because you can go out and make a pitch to give some equity away to somebody and they give you $10 million when you only had 50,000. Like, you know, like all of a sudden you're starting to play with the universe a little bit,
mm-hmm. and
starting to play with where you were. Now there are some businesses that you have to do that. I mean, pharmaceuticals and software development, things like that. Like you need massive amounts of capital up front. But you see young people going out there and just raising capital so they can change that equation so it can go faster, so that they can make more decisions and have more people and more resources and things like that. And, you know, they end up in a really horrible place. You know, and I mean, even funded businesses don't work. Most funded businesses don't work. So that's interesting. I've never really thought about that in relationship to, you know, trying to achieve excellence, because, you know, unlimited resources is so hard. People strive to have unlimited resources, right? Like we spend our whole lives trying to get to a point where we feel like we have unlimited resources. We want all the money that we can possibly have so that we can choose to do whatever we want. I can tell you that for me, and I mean, you're building me up to be a billionaire, and I'm, that'd be cool, maybe, I've known.
I feel like you're going to tell us the pitfalls of this. Come on.
Well, like
unlimited resources kind of suck is what you're about to say.
It's so. I'll tell you this. So when I sold my business and there was a period of time where I wasn't working, and I didn't have to.
Which means he had a lot of money, folks. That's what that means. He's kind of beating around the bush. He had a lot of money.
But the purpose of getting up in the morning,
yeah,
becomes very difficult.
Mm.
Like when
because
when
you have all the resources. You
when
don't
your choices
to-
are unlimited, it's like I used to tell people, it's like and in the e-commerce world, the whole reason that we invented search and filtering and everything else was that human beings need limited choices. We cannot have unlimited choice. We can't have unlimited resource. We don't know what to do with it. We freeze. Like you're not going to go into a shoe store where you want to get, you know, a pair of black CrossFit tennis shoes for your next R7 workout. And you walk in and the sale guys go, absolutely, we've got 4,722 pairs of those, all different styles. You want to start trying them on? You'd be like, no, I'm not going to try on 4,000 pairs of shoes, dude. Like, no, like we can't do that as human beings.
Choice overload. It's too much.
It's hard. It's hard because the guardrails are taken off, right? Like that's when things get tricky. Things get tricky when you have too much resource. I don't know. I'm getting off topic.
So this is good because when you get to that, I mean, that's kind of the American dream, isn't it? And as a Christian entrepreneur who's trying to glorify the Lord with their talents and abilities, and like we've achieved, you know, we've achieved nirvana, like it's happened, right? That's the goal, isn't it? Or is it the grind? See, it's really hard. It's really hard because when you're in the grind, you want to get out of it because it's not fun. But then you realize, dang, after you hit, you got on the peak, you go, dang, that was pretty cool. I did that. And then you've gone back to like, I want to grind.
Oh, I can't stop.
You can't stop.
I'm addicted. Well, I don't even know what the other is, like playing golf, like, and nothing against golf. I mean, golf, I used to play golf and golf's fun. Fishing's fun. Like, I don't want to fish every day, all day. Like the reason I like fishing is because it's limited and it's something I'm trying to get to go do. Like, If I did it every day, all day long, I'd be like, okay, I need a new hobby. Like that would. So I don't know the balance of it is, but I mean, it's all part of life. Life's hard.
The perspective is interesting though, because for those of us out there that are still grinding and trying to reach where Joe Schmidt's been, and he's saying, dude, it's not that great. Like grind.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, enjoy the grind. Enjoy. That's the journey. The destination is the journey, right? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. Biblically, it is. I mean, Christ, the only ultimate goal is to die and be in heaven, right?
Yeah.
That's the only ultimate goal. And we could say that we've got that all figured out, how that works, right? And, you know, we aren't going to go down that route, but like, I mean, do we, like, you know, it's supposed to be a mystery. It is a mystery. We've got it kind of, we think some people think that they absolutely know how it all works, but the reality is, you know, that's the ultimate goal. Between now and then, it's a matter of being on earth, toiling, and, you know, happiness. Maybe that's an outcome for some people. I mean, for me, I deal with anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it doesn't matter for me, like how much stuff I got, like, it doesn't mean that I'm going to wake up in the morning and be giddy. Like, I wake up in the morning pretty shitty most of the time.
Mm.
Like I'm a grumpy bastard. I'm a grumpy guy a lot. You can ask my family. And that's part of me. And I overcome that, and I figure out how to not be that person, or, you know, how to mitigate my general grumpiness. But like just because you got dough, I mean, and it also screws you up. I mean, giving by people with money is like, what is it? Literally had this stat this weekend at church. It was like, what are you, 3 times more likely to tithe if you're making under $45,000 a year than if you're making over $150,000 a year? Like that's like money is very tricky. And we know that because it's talked about more in the Bible than the kingdom of heaven or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's some good pastor thing to say there, but you know, the reality is it makes it tricky. I'm also not woe is me-ing because we've had some successful businesses. But the grind is a big part of it. The other thing for me is, I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I want to make more money. Like I want to make more money, and this is going to sound cliche, but like, I want to, because I have, we have really developed in our, in the gift God has given us of generosity. Because, you know, I really do truly feel like generosity is not something God wants of you. It's something God wants for you, is to be able to give. And I really do believe scientifically it's better to give than receive. Like giving is a gift. Like it's so good for you physiologically. And so, you know, having more resource to be able to be generous with is so much fun. Like that's actually really fun, good stuff. And that can be done in money, or it can be done in time, or it can be done in talent. It can be done however. So it's not like you gotta get rich and then you can go be generous. But for me, either carving out time or making more money, or, you know, finding, you know, places that I can give my talent to, you know, those are all areas that can bring someone much more joy than just getting rich. You know, getting rich, and I mean, most rich people aren't happy. Happiest people I've ever met in the world are don't have much money.
This is kind of a funny story, but I was around an NHL fighter who happens to be a Christian. He was a pretty good fighter, played for like 3 or 4 teams, and I was like, I won't say his name, but I was like, hey man, aren't you a Christian? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, dude, why do you fight so much? And he said, it's better to give than it is to receive. I was like, that's awesome. I'm giving, man.
Facts. That's right. That's absolute facts.
Yeah.
That's funny. He should preach. That preaches right there. Right. Pastors, a good pastor would use the crap out of that thing.
Yeah. So I do want to say this. I wanted to get this out in the podcast, yeah, and we'll land the plane here. I do meet with a lot of Christian entrepreneurs throughout the world, because we own the search term Christian marketing. So we get leads from all around the world. And if you're listening to this, it's been an hour and 11 minutes, but you know, you're probably not listening anymore. But if you are, you know, like, God bless you. Yeah. But I do really appreciate your story, Joe, of like being rigorous. You've heard me say that word before, like being detailed. The 10-2 story is laser focused. It's packed filled with dedication and excellence. You know, there's no way you're going to do that without having an excellent product and being able to sell it. Like you've accomplished the American dream of having an idea of a business and building it to a point where somebody wants to give you a lot of money for it. Like that's pretty cool.
It's a fun thing to do.
Yeah. And so you do that with dedication, excellence, persistence, all of those attributes. I just want to encourage those out there that if you've got a vision from the Lord and you really want to, you know, like build it, you know, you got to come with resources and you got to come with, you know, some detail and you got to be able to work. Like, that's the biggest thing that I see. Like you gotta work, man. Like I've gone down this path, me personally, knowing that you gotta work. It's a true story. You may even been part of this. I was really looking at building up something, a mentorship program, where, you know, like it was very involved and I got a lot of people in the room, a lot of really strong, influential people in the room.
I was there.
You were there.
Yep.
And
that was your own facility.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we got everybody there and you gave a pitch.
I gave a pitch and everybody was like, dude, whatever Dave you're involved with, I don't even know why I'm here, but like, yeah. I want to do it. And at the end of the day, like, I was like, do I want to do this? Mm. Like, and God just like shut it down. Like, no, this is not your path. Mm. Because I knew it was going to take 5 to 7 years of commitment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that persistence, that laser focus. And it was a no, because I knew what it was going to take in order to build that thing, and I knew the investment. And so I just want to encourage you out there to really think about what you're going to commit to for the next 5 years, and you got to commit to it, man. Like, if you can't do it on somebody else's shoulders or somebody else's investment, it's got to be you. I too share the same story of I've never gotten investment, man, ever. I've always had to show a profit and take that profit and put it back into the business and show more profit. You know, like that's how I had to build the company.
Well, I'll stop with this. I had an amazing entrepreneurship professor in college, and he taught how to do business planning. And he always argued that the most important reason to do the work up front, which is what you were doing, what you did with the mentorship program.
Yeah.
Was you were doing the work up front. You got the people in the room. You hadn't gotten so far out there that you couldn't pull it back.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole reason to do business planning when you're going to start a business is to figure out that you don't want to do it.
Mm.
Like, that's the most powerful outcome. It either isn't going to work or you don't want to do it. Because what you don't want to do,
yeah,
is start something and realize 2 years in and a mortgage, second mortgage in, and your friends and family that you borrowed money from and employees and everything else. And you're like, I don't think I want to do this.
Yeah. Like,
that is not the time to make the decision. And so, you know, but that's where I think for anybody listening who's thinking about doing their own thing or getting out there and trying stuff. Like you've got to get out and start doing things and start stretching those muscles and trying those things. And, you know, you stop talking about it and thinking about it and go do something about it. But, you know, do it to where you can prove that maybe it's not for you. Everybody's
yeah,
always, you got to go all in. I'm like, do you? You know, I mean, eventually, yes. But, you know, at the beginning, it's like, you know, I mean, we date for a reason. We date people for a reason. Like, we don't just walk up to somebody and say, will you marry me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be a bad idea. I mean, unless it were my wife, that would have been perfect. Anyway,
all right.
It was fun, Dave.
Until next time. Join us again next week as we continue to uncover the secrets to success with faith-based testimonies and the power of R7. Remember, destiny awaits, but time does not.